So it's great to be here with you today on Mother's Day. Anyway, when I was in college, I became fast friends with a woman I'll call Jenny. And we were in the same program. We both went into teaching, and we ended up getting married the same year, and we were just really tight. So we talked about starting our families, that we wanted to have kids in a few years, but we weren't ready quite yet. So a few years later, I did get pregnant, and with a son, my first child, he's here today. Three of my kids are here today, and my seven grandchildren. In case you didn't know, I have seven grandchildren. And so we had our first child. What I didn't know is that Jenny and Brian were trying to start their family, but things weren't going as planned. And so then I saw Jenny a while later, and she told me, well, they found out that Jenny and Brian, they found out they could never have children. So I come to Mother's Day with a certain amount of trepidation. I think about Jenny today, and I think about all the emotions that are tied to Mother's Day for women. I think there are some of you, like Jenny, who have struggled with infertility. You always wanted to have children, and it just hasn't worked out. Maybe you never wanted children, and people don't seem to understand you. Maybe you did have children, or maybe you're hoping to have children. Maybe things didn't pan out the way you expected there either. Some of you may have lost a child, or maybe you're estranged from one. Or there's so many things that happen to our nurturing hearts, aren't there? So I come understanding that today, but I want to tell you that as women, God put our nurturing hearts in us for a reason. That heart within you that is designed to care for others, like Judy said, to care for them, to pray for them, to make sure that someone, usually someone more vulnerable than ourselves, is okay physically, emotionally, and spiritually. That matters to God. God put that within you as a woman. And it means a lot to him that we walk that out. But there are a lot of things, like we talked about, that come against us, aren't there? There are all those things that assault our nurturing heart that make it hard for us to keep loving, to keep giving, to keep believing, to keep doing what we're called to do as women. So today what I want to do, I want to look at a couple of women in the Bible who went through a lot of things in their womanhood with their nurturing hearts. Women have been facing the same thing since the beginning of time. So what we're going to do, we're going to go way back to the beginning. We're going to go back to Genesis 4,000 years ago, and we're going to look at the lives of two Bible women. So let's go to Genesis 16. I'm going to start in verse 1. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her." Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. So I don't know about you, but when I read the Bible, sometimes I think, what in the world? What is going on here? What was this? I don't get this. God, is this really, you know, the patriarch, the great man of faith? And we don't understand it. My oldest daughter, who's here today, said she's reading this classic old school Bible story book to her kids, and it doesn't whitewash anything. I mean, the truth is there. You know, the Bible is a tell-it-like-it-is book, right? It tells the worst thing that someone ever did, the greatest hero, and it tells the worst thing they ever said and the best things. And I don't know about you. I'm kind of glad my story's not in there for all of history to read forever. But she's reading this Bible story book to her kids, and they stop her all the time. They said, "Wait, Mom, what? Who did what? Who killed who? Why?" But it's all there, isn't it? And that's the way it is with the story of Abraham and Sarah, who, that's what their names became after God changed their names, Abram and Sarai, to Abraham and Sarai, Sarah. So here you have the story of their real, tell-it-like, messed-up family life. And maybe you know the story. So Abraham and Sarah have been married a long time. Abraham was 85 by now. Sarah was 75. They probably married when Abraham was about 30. And they've been trying to have children all those years. And just year after year, it wasn't happening. God had even given Abraham a promise, and still no baby. So maybe some of you are intimately acquainted with the pain of infertility, what that does to you, how you try month after month, and you end up disappointed month after month, and then year after year, how that disappointment eats away at your heart, how it affects your relationship with your spouse, and all that it does to you. Well, this is what Sarah and Abraham were going through. Imagine living in that state for decades, in that position. But in the ancient world, there was more to it than that. It was understood in the ancient world that a man married in order to produce an heir, to have a child, someone to pass his property on to when he died. And it was understood that that's why he took a wife. So that was Sarah's one job. That was her one job. Abraham, this wealthy man, took a wife, and she was to produce an heir. And she had failed at the one thing, the only thing that she was supposed to do. Maybe you struggle with the fear that you're failing in some way as a woman. You know, we don't face the exact same cultural pressures that Sarah did. Our pressures are different. Sarah faced the pressure. She suggested a culturally accepted solution. It was an ancient form of surrogacy. That's what was going on there. We know about surrogate mothers today. This was an ancient way. In fact, sometimes this was even written into the marriage contracts. Did you know they had marriage contracts 4,000 years ago? So there are four ancient documents that have been found that talk about this, about a wife's responsibility. So it was in her contract. If she could not produce an heir, she had to provide a surrogate for her husband. And that usually was one of her personal handmaids, which is who Hagar was to Sarah. So, but the things we face may be a little bit different. But you may feel the pressure nonetheless. Maybe it's the pressure to have a career and not waste your talents and really do something with your life. Or maybe it's the pressure to produce wonder kids that anyone would be proud of, to be the perfect mom. Maybe it's the pressure to stay home with your children. Maybe it's the pressure to work. Maybe it's the pressure to homeschool. Maybe it's the pressure to volunteer. There are all these pressures that come at a woman. We face cultural pressures today, and they face cultural pressures back then too. I remember when I was home with my kids, I was actually a homeschool mom, had four kids, and I thought I was working. I thought I was busy, but I remember getting to these family gatherings, and it was the women in my family who would say to me, "Sarah, when are you going to stop sitting around and do something with your life?" And I thought, I think I am doing something with my life. I don't really feel like I'm sitting around. But we feel the pressures, don't we? Cultural pressures do take their toll. So Sarah gave in to these feelings of inadequacy and failure. And she suggested that culturally accepted solution. And Abraham went for it, didn't he? Sure, it seemed to solve the immediate issue, but if you know the story, you also know that it brought years of conflict and heartache. I want to say, ladies, when we give in to our cultural pressures, even if they come from Christian culture, even if they come from our Christian friends, we may end up reaping heartache. We have to know what God has spoken to us, how God is directing our life. Our lives are not always going to look the same, even our Christian lives. When Jenny and Brian learned they could never have children, they considered adoption. But then they found out the reason they couldn't have children was that Brian suffered from a condition that meant he'd probably only live about another 10 years. So before he reached 40, he would be gone. That was the prognosis for his disease. And so they decided not to adopt because they decided that bringing children into a home that would soon be fatherless was not a good idea. Some of their friends didn't understand that. They didn't share all the details with everybody because it was personal. So not everyone knew, and people didn't understand why they weren't doing this. There are so many children out there who need families. Why weren't they doing it? But Jenny and Brian prayed it through, and they really felt like the Lord was saying, just accept things as they are. Just let it go. I think we need to do that with one another. We need to let it go. We need to give each other the freedom to walk out our different lives and to encourage one another in that, to encourage each other to listen to the Lord and follow him, but to release one another as women, particularly as Christians also, to live the life God has called us to live. So let's see how Hagar responded when she got pregnant so easily after Sarah had completely failed. Let's pick it up in verse 4. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." "Your slave is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. When Hagar learned she was pregnant, she decided she didn't have to listen to Sarah anymore. I mean, in effect, she worked for Sarah. She was her personal slave or personal servant. But she decided, well, I don't really think I have to do that anymore since I'm pregnant with your husband's child. So Sarah, like any good woman, right, she blamed her husband. And he was probably wondering, how is this my fault? I think this was your idea. Wasn't it your idea? And I just went along with it. And so they had this dynamic going between them, right? The tensions of what was going on caused friction in their marriage. And it is true that Abraham, as the father of Hagar's child, he could have stepped in and dealt with it. But he didn't want to, and he'd rather have Sarah deal with it. So Sarah did. And how did she deal with it? By abusing Hagar. And it got so bad that Hagar, pregnant and vulnerable, ran away. So what things can cause a woman, a person who is created to be nurturing, to care for others, to become abusive? Personal disappointments, a difficult marriage, challenging family life, maybe an abuse-ridden childhood of her own, a quick temper, a need to control her world. Probably all of the above. Yet indulging in abusive behavior is never the answer. We need to know that any of us can go there, though, if we're not careful. I remember when God showed me that I was being too hard on my kids. And I was surprised. I was trying so hard to be a great mom. I was trying to be that Christian mom I never had. I was trying to raise wonderful kids who loved God and who knew the difference between right and wrong. And I was, in my zeal, though, I was overdoing it. And I had become too controlling. God had to stop me short and set me free. Moms, I want to tell you that God sees us in our struggles and he's there with us. He wants to set us free from those things, or harming ourselves or harming others. So let's go on with our story. Let's see what happens to Hagar when she's on the road. We'll pick it up in verse 7. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress Sarai," she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count." So Hagar was on her way back to Egypt. We know that because Shur was on the road to Egypt. So she was going home. She's going back to her country. Here she was. She was young. She was pregnant. She was on her own with no good way of taking care of herself or her baby. But I think she probably thought, if I can just make it back to Egypt, I'll figure out something. But you have to think about the fact that she was sold into slavery. So she didn't have family with means who were going to help her out when she got home. She didn't have mom and dad with the house, and they were going to take care of her and her baby and provide for her. But her situation was so bad, all she could think of was escaping. I have to get out of here. I cannot take it any longer. She probably hoped that she could find a new mistress, just someone who would treat her better than Sarah had been treating her. Hagar is the ancient version of the working woman. The woman who is struggling to make it by the sweat of her brow. Hagar had worked hard. She wasn't married like Sarah to one of the wealthiest men around. She didn't have that kind of cush life. She didn't have the advantages of money or education or position or even a loving husband. Talk about a weird family dynamic. How would that work out, right? You have Abraham, Sarah, Hagar. How did she fit? That would be difficult. That would be challenging. Maybe as we go through this story, you identify more with Hagar than you do with Sarah. You haven't had all those advantages. And you feel like the women who have don't get you. Sometimes you feel like even the Christian ones treat you like, oh, if you just had more faith, or if you just did what I did, your life would be more like mine. Your life would be easier. Hagar knew that wasn't the truth. Sometimes maybe you even think you wish you could escape. You feel like running away. I know in my early years of motherhood, besides being hard on my kids, maybe it came from my own frustrations. I was exhausted all the time. I felt like I felt cut off from the world around me. I didn't know what was going on around me. All I could think about is getting through a day, you know, taking care of four kids and getting through the next day. I couldn't remember the last time I had a real adult conversation when I thought about something interesting. I'm kind of intellectual, you might be able to tell, and I liked that, but that wasn't happening during this season of my life. And I couldn't think straight, and I remember just going through this time, I thought, oh God, what should I be doing with my life? I don't know what's happening. What should I be doing? And it was probably more just a thought than a real prayer, and I felt like I would have wanted to escape. Hagar didn't just feel like running away. She did it. But God has a way of finding us, doesn't he? It's like that song we sang, The Reckless Love of God. He'll go anywhere to find us. God has a way of finding us, no matter how hard we try to hide from him. And he knew exactly where Hagar was. And in his love and kindness, he showed up. He drew Hagar into conversation. And he pointed her toward her best option. She didn't have a lot of options, but there was a best option. Things weren't perfect in her life, were they? It was kind of a weird thing going on, but there was a best option. Have you ever been pregnant under less than ideal circumstances? Maybe it was what was that? Okay, no. All right. Good. Maybe it was an unplanned pregnancy, or maybe seemingly untimely, or maybe there were other factors that made it really difficult. But this is what Hagar was dealing with. God wants to meet us in our difficult times and show us our best option. May not be the perfect life, but our best option. If Hagar went back, she would have the care, the food and shelter, and someone watching out for her health that she wouldn't have otherwise. It'd be more likely that she would, that her baby would be born healthy, and that she would come through everything okay herself. It was her best option. But it involved returning to a difficult family dynamic. And probably those of you who do live within the tension of a blended family can imagine the things that were going through her mind, the things I have to face if I go back. One thing interesting in this passage is that the words mistreat, the way Sarah treated Hagar, and submit, what the angel said to Hagar, are different forms of the same word. And I think there are times when God gives us a choice, or maybe life gives us a choice, between submitting voluntarily to our circumstances and making the best of it, or resisting and finding that our circumstances have a way of subjecting us to their will. There are times to give in, and there are times to pursue other options. When I was struggling in my life, wondering, what should I do with my life? What should I be doing, God? God met me, he found me, he drew me into conversation, and he showed me my best option. He answered my question, well, I'm going to tell you in a second, but I don't know how God talks to you, but with me, he's pretty straight. Maybe he's loving and gentle with you, but with me, he's straight. It's kind of the Bible, like the Bible, you know. He just lays it out like it is. So I had this question, what should I be doing, God? I don't know what I should be doing. I'm not happy. I don't feel fulfilled, all those things. And I felt the Holy Spirit say to me, do what you're doing. Just change your attitude. And I thought, that wasn't very nice. My attitude, what? But that's what I needed to do. And it's amazing how changing your attitude can change so many things. Sometimes we need to surrender to the life we have. Hagar needed to surrender to her life by changing her attitude. So Hagar did go back to Sarah, but there was something she had to say before she did. I'm going to skip to verse 13. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, "You are the God who sees me." For she said, "I have now seen the one who sees me." Egypt was known for its many, many gods. In fact, Egyptologists now, people who study ancient Egypt, have identified over 1,400 deities that they worship. Did you hear that? Hagar came from a people who worshiped 1,400 different gods. But there was not one of those gods who met her on that road to Egypt. Not one of them was the one who saw her in her time of need, saw her in her misery, understood what she was going through, and met her there, and lovingly gave her a wonderful promise that a great nation would come from the baby she was holding within her body, and met her in her need. He was the God who saw her. So Hagar did go home. You probably know the story. It wasn't perfect for sure. Sarah and Hagar continued to struggle. And finally, after Sarah had her own baby, things came to a head, and Hagar and Ishmael were sent away for good. Life doesn't always turn out pretty. As women and mothers, we can entrust our hearts of nurture to God. Worship team, you want to come up now? So I want to ask you today, have you encountered the God who sees you? The God who is fully aware of every difficult circumstance and sinful tendency that is warring against your nurturing heart? Do you know that he sees what you're going through today and desires to walk with you through it? Will you risk following this God when he seems to be directing you into the very thing you were trying to avoid in the first place? Will you trust him with your heart of nurture so that it continues to be full of the life and breath that will bring life to others? Will you turn away from your disappointment or bitterness or fear or anger and into the hands of the God who sees you? When Jenny and Brian decided not to adopt, Jenny threw herself into her teaching. She was a high school math teacher. But then her inner city school decided to start this program to help more kids get into college. And Jenny jumped in. She wanted to do that. She wanted to help these kids. Not only did Jenny do that, though, she volunteered in a Christian club that was associated with her school. And she invited her students to the club. And she did youth work way beyond the time when you should be doing that, when you should be doing those games where you're going to break your neck or whatever. She did that, and she saw so many of her students come to Christ. And then she decided to launch a Habitat for Humanity club at her school, and she watched as pounding a nail or drilling a hole helped her students more than it helped anyone else. And she sat there every year at graduation watching her kids graduate and watched them with their college acceptance letters to be the first person in their family to ever go to college. No, Jenny never had children of her own, but she has used her nurturing heart, her heart of mothering, to impact thousands of teenagers. What will you do with your nurturing heart?